The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode number 11 of MMA to the Max. I am your host, Robert Taylor, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Joe Hudson, a.k.a. Riverside Joe. What's up, Joe? How you doing on this Friday evening?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Enjoying a nice Friday night fight night of the UFC. It's a nice turn of events. UFC on Friday night, Bellator on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'm really excited about UFC being on Friday tonight because my new job that I spoke about before kind of screws me up on my schedule a little bit. I wasn't able to watch last week's fight until the day after, and then when we were getting set to record, we had a little bit of a mishap. We won't get into it, but things happen. Out of our control, and unfortunately we weren't able to record. But here we are this week, and why not just talk about what we might have talked about last week?
Yeah, we can get into last week's card a little bit. I mean, we've got a couple cards to talk about of actual completed fights in Branch versus Rockhold, as well as tonight's fight, Okami versus OSP. So yeah, Branch, Rockhold, on that card.
I find it so weird that you said both of those main events backwards.
Yeah, I know. I do that all the time. I don't know what it is, dude. All the time I do that. Talk to me about any fight card, and I always go backwards. It's just maybe because I'm emotionally dyslexic or something like that. I have no idea. But on the Rockhold Branch card, give me some of your highlights, man. What do you think? What do you want to brush up on as far as implications, great fights, standout performances?
Before we jump into that, why don't we just highlight our beer of the week. What are you drinking tonight, Joe?
Deja vu, my friend. Stella Artois. Not only is it delicious, but it's on sale at Vons for $9.99 a 12-pack if you buy three or more. And you bet your ass I bought three or more.
Not a bad deal.
No.
Deja vu as well on my end. I am sticking with the Modelos. It's just a very, very nice beer, a nice drink that goes down. We've been kind of busy with the new job and setting up for the little one's 10th birthday party tomorrow. So I wanted something with a little more of a crisp taste compared to something a little more hoppy like an IPA. But it works.
What are we drinking tomorrow night?
Nothing tomorrow night, but during the day I'll drink whatever I want. But I got to go to sleep for work. So
I'll be drinking tomorrow night at the little one's 10th birthday party. Yeah. So I'll
be drinking during the day.
Yeah, you got that new job, man. Don't mess with that, dude. Super stoked for you on that one.
But and I appreciate that. Back to talking about the last week's episode that we weren't able to record about, and the show Rockhold versus Branch. Everybody by now, it's been a week. They I'm pretty sure they know exactly what happened, who won, who looked great, who didn't look great. Who was your MVP of the show, and in your mind, who do you believe was the most impressive performer last week?
It's a toss-up for me between Gillespie and Smith. The reason I think Gillespie, I expected him to look great, right? Gregor Gillespie. Gregor. I expected him to look great. I expected him to put on performance. I expected him to do well, winning by submission second round. But he looked phenomenal. But for me, the reason I think Smith was impressive was because Lombard hung in there. Lombard, I thought, was going to gas out. I picked Smith third round TKO. I expected Lombard to gas out more than he did. And the fact is, he didn't. But Smith, instead of getting beat up by Lombard's strength and resistance and walking through Smith's power, he stepped up and he kept moving and he kept growing throughout the fight. And because of that, I just saw him, you know, again, he's a journeyman, but I saw him step up into a better role, a real fighter's fighter. You saw a fighter's heart in there. So for me, that was my standout performance. That was my MVP of the night.
I think with Anthony Smith, I think he's growing past the journeyman status in my mind. He's looked very impressive in this run in the UFC. And like you, I had also had him picked for a third round TKO. So yeah, we got that perfect. Hector Lombard just hasn't evolved his game enough in the sport. He's always relying on his power shots. He doesn't set anything up. And once you get that timing figured out, you're able to just do whatever you want with him. And that's pretty much what Smith did. He figured out his timing
and was taken over. And to me, Hector Lombard used to be a smaller weight class version of Yoel Romero. You figure out his timing and you don't allow yourself to be countered by whatever it is he's going to throw at you, and you're going to beat him. And I think Smith got hit by Lombard too, and he just kept pushing forward. And I don't know, man, it was a great performance. So hats off to him.
Yeah, it was a great performance. I can't give him the MVP, at least in my mind. That would go to Kamaru Usman, who absolutely starched Sergio Moraes. And the reason why I give him the MVP, and he was my big performer of the night, it was his first finish in the UFC since coming to the UFC proper. And the man is on, I believe, now a 10-fight win streak. He deserves top 10 competition. I know he was... I forgot exactly who he was calling out. I know he's been calling out everybody, left and right. He used to call out Damian Maia.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him against Ponzinibbio. I think that'd be a great fight.
I think he beats Ponzinibbio up. I think he goes back to his old ways, wrestles him to the ground, and beats him up with some good grounded pound. But yeah, no, I agree with you, man. I had him picked to win via lay and pray and dry hump. But he proved to have some hands. So, dude, again, Usman looked great. I'm not going to argue with that MVP either. Like, I think I see where you're coming from on that one. He looked phenomenal. Like, I was shocked when he got that knockout. I just stared at my wife with my mouth open like, what was that? That was Usman? So, yeah, great job, buddy. And I'm not going to agree that he was the MVP, but I'm not going to argue so much with you. I think we have a lot to agree with one another tonight, and that's going to be another – pseudo agreement, so enjoy it.
Yeah, well, I want to also talk about a special MVP of the show. Even though he didn't win, you got to give it to Alex Reyes stepping into the UFC on short notice at a higher weight class against a finisher like Mike Perry.
Dude, Mike Perry is a freaking murderer. If it wasn't for MMA, that guy would be freaking killing people on the streets for money. Like, that's how wicked that guy, and I mean that with the utmost respect. Like, that's just how much disregard he has for his opponent's well-being. But yeah, and to take that fight on short notice, up a weight class against someone like that, dude, yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you a bit, dude, but I just agree with you on that, man.
Yeah, no, I have so much respect for that man, and that's a local guy from Victorville, California. Yep. So, so much respect. So happy he's there. His brother Dominic just debuted back in June. I think Alex Reyes is a way more talented fighter than his brother, even though his brother debuted with a win. It wasn't quite the same circumstances as Alex, and Alex's next fight in the UFC will be at 155, I guarantee it, and then he'll show everybody exactly how good he is, and I can't wait for it to happen.
Yeah, I agree. He took a fight on short notice with Mike Perry so he can get a contract with the UFC. I think he earned a lot of... brownie points for doing so. So yeah, good for him, man. I keep wanting to say hats off to all these guys because that's kind of my stupid verbal crutch, but yeah, for real, he can have my hat. I don't know how much they paid him, but I wouldn't step in the octagon with Mike Perry for less than a couple million because I know what that guy is going to do is going to take years off of my life, dude. So ballsy.
Well, a guy who would step in the octagon with Mike Perry for excuse me, less than a million, Robbie Lawler, the guy that Mike Perry called out.
Yeah,
I'd be down to see that. I'd be okay with seeing that fight. But then recently, though, within the week after the show leading up to tonight, Mike Perry was called out by Emil Meek. And
yeah, I think that's a good fight, too.
I'd love to see that fight. Emil Meek is so underrated.
Well, those are again. I think both of those guys are going to fight in a phone booth. They're both going to take the center of the octagon. Neither one of them are going to step outside the double black lines, and they're going to fight a technical brawl, all hands with some leg kicks, nothing going high, maybe a body kick, but it's going to be a technical brawl between the two of those guys. The same I think it would be with Lawler. I think the winner of that should get the top five fight against Lawler, because Meek, yeah. if you beat Perry. Meek, then you deserve it. Perry, if you can beat Meek, I think he deserves it now, but that's even more proof. If he can put a hurting on a guy like Emil Meek, then, dude, take your top five fight with Lawler, man, and make your point. And I'm still riding the Perry train. I love that guy. He's a great fighter, man. A finisher. He's got true finisher blood in him.
Yeah, I like Mike Perry. I like watching him fight. I'm not a big fan of his outside the octagon antics. Like social media, some of the things. I mean, he's said some pretty awful things before. I don't think he beats Robbie Lawler. I don't think he beats anybody in the top five, to be honest. He's one of those guys that's going to just... He's basically going to be like a... Chris Lytle. Not going to be a champion. Not going to be a champion, but he's going to always entertain and win nothing but bonuses. Joe Lozon, Chris Lytle, whoever you want to say.
Joe Lozon, yeah.
And that's just... And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. There's really nothing wrong with that.
Like, you don't think he can beat Wonder Boy? No. Robbie Lawler, maybe. Condit, Cerrone, and now we're talking guys that he can be competitive with. Lawler, because Lawler's going to want to box with him. I mean, he could be competitive with those guys. He's going to be a top five guy.
He's got the power to land something, sure, but technique-wise, I mean, Lawler's just head and shoulders above him. Carlos Condit's head and shoulders above him, technique-wise. Even Jorge Masvidal, technique-wise, it has head and shoulders above him.
Both you and I are going to agree that Masvidal is arguably, depending on matchup, unfortunately with him, it really comes down to matchup, probably one of the best welterweights in the world. I think him versus Tyron would be a great fight because Tyron is going to do what he does and keep his back against the cage and circle away. And I think Grant Gamebred is just going to cut the cage off and point strike him and stay out of distance. And he's quick enough to, you know, dodge any of the speed and quickness that, the Tyron's going to throw at him. So I don't know. And just like Wonder Boy, but Wonder Boy isn't as aggressive as Masvidal. That's why I think Masvidal would win. Carlos Condit, again, against a guy like Perry, I think Condit's not going to use his technique. He's going to get caught in a brawl because that's, you know, because Carlos is a fucking brawler too. He's a technical brawler. He'll get caught in the brawl and make it a good fight, and I think he can beat him. But again, I'm a Carlos fan. You know, I could be going for Carlos the whole way. Cerrone, I think he can do the same thing. Cerrone doesn't fight good, and you put a lot of pressure on him. And I think Mike is just going to walk him down, and that's how he could beat Cerrone. So I see he's a top five guy. And I don't know. That's why I just don't think the comparison to maybe like a Lozon is accurate. A Lozon is great, puts on great performances, but Lozon's not a top five guy. He's always going to be top 10.
Well, he got to top five at one point. Lozon was on the cusp of title shot, but each time he just lost to a legit top five fighter. So that's where I think Mike Perry's ceiling is going to be. That could be proven wrong, so we don't know. That could be proven wrong.
That's a good point. Yeah, again, fuck, I hate to not argue with you. That's kind of a good point, you jerk.
Yeah, well, that's what happens. Eventually, everybody comes around.
I'm never coming around on some of these, my friend.
Yeah, but so the main event, Luke Rockhold, David Branch. Rockhold needs to keep his hands up. That's all. That's mostly what I can get out of this fight. I think Branch is a legit top 10 fighter. Rockhold is legit one of the best, probably the best middleweight in the world, depending on which Rockhold shows up. But Jesus, man, if he keeps his hands down like he did in the first round with Branch, he's not going to be the champion again. That's all I can say. He came out with a win, sure, but anybody else that hits harder than Branch, which is a lot of the middleweights,
Yoel Romero, Jacare Souza, freaking. He was. I understand he was sick, but he was kind of getting pieced apart by what was obviously an injured, or now we know an injured Chris Weidman. And then he himself was injured, so I get that too. But yeah, he gets that chin exposed. He does. But the one thing that he does do is if he gets you down, you had better do everything in your power to not let him on top of you. He's got the best top game in MMA. Who's got better?
It's scary. It's terrifying. His top game is terrifying. If you go to the ground with Luke Rockhold, you better hope you're not on the bottom because that's game over. It's Jesus. I've never seen anybody's top game that scary.
Maybe Ben Askren in all of MMA can compete with that kind of top game, but nothing against Ben Askren.
It's not as terrifying, though. Not as terrifying.
And he works more from side control and in the guard and stuff, but if you let Rockhold get mount, just tap. Just be done. I mean, my God, is his top game just the sickest I've ever freaking seen.
Which actually kind of was a point I wanted to bring up too. That you said just tap. David Branch did tap, and a lot of people online were pissed off about that, saying, "Oh yeah, well he has no heart." No, he's smart. I'm sorry, he's smart. Yeah, he wasn't getting out. He was getting his ass beat. It was over. Why take unnecessary punishment? Just the card before that, we were talking about Gavin Tucker getting his ass beat by Rick Glenn, uncomfortably getting his ass beat, and the ref did nothing. And sometimes fighters are just too tough for their own good.
And no, Branch tap. It was the right thing to do, because what was he going to do? He was spread out, and anyone will tell you that hip pressure, you know, talk to Demi Lovato, the hip pressure that Rockhold can put on you will change your life. You ain't getting up. You ain't rolling over. And so what are you going to do? Sit there and take more punches? No, yeah, tap out's fine. I'm glad in our MMA fantasy, the UFC Fantasy League, they did count it as a second round TKO, because that gave me a perfect and helped me out for that night. The
it best shouldn't card have been, I've though. It's year. Still a submission. It's a submission due to punches.
I agree with you. It's a submission. He tapped out. He gave up, so to speak, and respectfully so. But yeah, I'm just glad they ruled it as a TKO, because that helped me beat you that night, because I don't think you did so well last week. It was a tough weekend for you, buddy.
It was. But you know, Luke Rockhold, though, his little comments towards GSP, I get it, but I wasn't a fan, because the fight's happening. Unless GSP gets injured, the fight's happening. Telling GSP to step aside, that's his fight. I'm sorry, dude. I love Luke Rockhold, but you got knocked out, you lost your title, and you took over a year off. You don't just get to come in and beat somebody. I think Branch was like ranked number 9. You don't just come in and beat the number 9 ranked guy and demand to take the place of a challenger in a title fight.
The number what ranked middleweight? See, now I sound like I'm you. Yeah. The number what ranked middleweight? Look, this is the problem.
Look, I'm not a fan of GSP getting the title fight, but the fact is the fight's made. And it's on. You can't just come in after a year off and just say, yeah, no, that fight should be mine. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if he'd have beat up a couple guys and then had this fight, this would have been his second fight in a year where he whooped up on somebody, then he could say something. I can agree with you there. But see, this is the problem with Rockhold. He's got the skill. He's got the looks. He does not have the mouthpiece. The man needs to take some acting classes. Or something, or he needs to get a Paul Heyman. You know what I mean? He needs a guy to be his mouthpiece, because what he says is, look, man, I'm the greatest welterweight, or I'm the greatest middleweight in the world. What are you doing here, GSP? Go away. Bye-bye. I'm going to win the fight.
Dude, imagine if after a fight, Rockhold beats somebody, Paul Heyman steps into the cage and does the entire post-fight interview for him, with Rockhold just standing there.
Right. Luke, I will do it for $78 a fight plus a ticket and a flight to the fight. I will be your mouthpiece, bro. I can do it way better than that. You're a great fighter, and I think he is a cocky guy, and he has all right to be, but it comes across that way, man. He needs to have some emotion. If he'd be like, look, I just proved to you guys I am the best middleweight in the world. I took a year off and I came in here and I whipped the 2-division champ in another division. I came out here and I put my stamp on this. This is my fight. If you put some emotion into it, we'd be all on board, because that's what sold us on Conor McGregor. You know what I mean? He put on a fight and he did the same things that Rockhold did, but when he got on that mic, he didn't go, I'm the greatest fighter in the world. I just destroyed this whole division. I'm moving up to lightweight and I'm going to fight for the belt. Is that what he did? No. It wasn't Ben Stiller up there freaking just monotoning everything through.
Well,
man.
I mean, with Conor, it was talking and a lot of Dana White dick sucking. I'm sorry.
Sure, but that's fine. But Dana White is also a fucking genius. Look at where he helped bring the UFC to what point it got to. So yeah,
Dana White is not a genius. Dana White is a hard worker. He's an endless worker, but he was not a genius, because his entire business model was taken and borrowed from Vince McMahon, who was a genius. And Dana White has said that himself. So I cannot say that Dana White is a genius when he borrowed his entire business model and plan from an actual business genius. But Dana White is one of the hardest working people in the entire world.
I'm not going to shit on Vince McMahon, but the truth is, and we both know this, Vince McMahon had an opportunity to buy the UFC way back when, before Tough came out, and he said, I can't buy him because I can't control who wins. So Dana White took the business model set up by Vince McMahon and put it in a much more difficult spot, because you can't dictate the winners. You can't decide who's your heel and who's your face. You can't do that.
Well, yeah, that's fine.
So Dana White
had
to build it out of, he had to build the same business model, using the same business model, and successfully doing it without being able to script it. To me, how to figure that out and to work that out to a real-world scenario is the reason I'm calling Dana White a genius. And I'm not negating his work ethic because he has it. But what he did is he saw someone with the skill that Luke Rockhold has, because I think Luke Rockhold's skill, let's say it's comparable to the MMA skill that McGregor has shown in the UFC, but McGregor had the proper mouthpiece. He didn't need writers. He didn't need people writing things for him to say. McGregor did it. I think if Rockhold would put some passion behind what he was saying and get rid of the goddamn monotone, he would be the biggest star in the UFC right now, because no offense to the smaller guys, everyone's drawn to the heavyweights, the light heavyweights, the middleweights, the guys who are big. I think he can do it if he would just stop being, I'm the best guy and I can beat everybody. I mean, I'm fucking sick of that shit, Luke. Put some passion into it, man.
I guess Luke's just a proof positive that good looks do not always equal charisma, so...
You're 100%. That's part of the fucking truth, because if you're good looking your whole life, you've never had to work at anything and develop a personality. So that's why you and I are great on the goddamn radio, because we are one... not dime pieces.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a couple nickels, but...
On a good day, after I take a shower and my hair's just been cut, I'm not alone. I'm a good nickel.
I think we covered it. I think with Rockhold, I think the next logical fight for him would probably just... Yoel Romero, honestly. Unless, of course, Bisping or GSP, whoever wins that fight, it gets injured somehow, most likely, because they don't want to defend a title after that.
Yeah, the winner of that is supposed to fight Whitaker.
But I'm saying if one of them gets injured or takes time off, then you might as well do Rockhold versus Whitaker for the interim until whoever wins that fight. I honestly think that's what's going to happen.
No one's going to accept another interim battle at middleweight. It's going to ruin middleweight. So that fight happens. Bisping wins. I believe he's going to win. Nothing against GSP, but Bisping wins. Bisping retires. And then it's Whitaker versus Rockhold to unify, quote unquote, the belt. That's what happens. Again, I've been right so far in my middleweight predictions, right? Was I not right?
I'm going to tell you right now that
7 weeks ago,
Rockhold's next fight is probably going to be Robert Whitaker for the interim title.
It's going to be Robert Whitaker to unify the belt, because Bisbee's going to win. He's going to retire. That's going to make Whitaker the non-linear champ, and he'll have to defend his belt to make it the quote-unquote linear legitimate belt. And it'll be against Rockhold. I'm agreeing with you, but I'm not saying it's for an interim. You know what? See now I'm going back on my words from earlier. It's not, if you look at the way Rockhold looks at it, where Bisbee's not the real champ, even though I think he is
the real champ.
He's the linear champ. Bisping's the linear champ, right?
Yeah, he beat him.
100%, purely linear. It went from Rich Franklin to Anderson Silva. I mean, you can even go back further to from Evan Tanner to Rich Franklin to Anderson Silva to Weidman to Rockhold to Bisping. That's linear as it gets. So he's the real champ. So if that's one thing, again, Rockhold, think about what you're doing. If you're trying to discredit the guy who knocked you out and got the belt, and he's not the real champ, well, he took it from you, so you're not the real champ. So then it's Weidman or it's Silva. Who's the real champ then? It's fucking Bisping. Bisbing's the real champ.
It is. It's Bisping. And I'm going to be really upset if we don't get the trilogy fight from Rockhold and Bisping. I'm going to be really upset about that. I think he deserves it.
I love to see it, but it's going to go the same way as the first fight, because I don't think Rockhold is taking anybody lightly ever again. He's still a slow starter in the first round. He's got to get his bearings. And unless he can get that freaking right hand up, he's going to be going night again. But he proved to have that right hand a little bit low. And if I'm Javier Mendez, I am duct taping that hand to his goddamn chin. No more jabs. You just throw left hands and you keep that right hand right here. You know what I mean? Because he's a southpaw. Keep that right hand up, duct tape it to the chin, and learn how to throw kicks and punches from there, man, or... I don't know. I want to see Rockhold do great things. I like him. I liked him back in Strikeforce. I thought he was a phenomenal fighter with great speed, technique, power, skill.
That reminds me. I wanted to. I didn't really want to, but I gotta bring it up right now.
Don't bring it up.
I saw there was a post online going around. Some people talking about who are the, you know, the best fighters in Strikeforce. Like, who are the best Strikeforce fighters of all time? And it really irritated me that they had Gilbert Melendez at number 5. Well, because when you talk about Strikeforce, Gilbert Melendez was Strikeforce.
I mean, I'm going to look that up, because who was 1 through 4?
I wish I had it like queued up right now. I really did. But I know it was horrible, man. But like, I think they had like Alistair Overeem over him, even though he only fought like 3 times. They didn't even have Josh Thompson on the list, which really bugged the hell out of me. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Was it Tapology?
I forgot where I saw it, to be honest, but it's something that irked me through this week, and I thought I'd just bring it up since we were talking. You mentioned Strikeforce, but yeah, it's just so if anybody has any opinions on it, and if you have an opinion on who are the best Strikeforce fighters of all time, and you don't have Gilbert Melendez as number 1, you're wrong. Sorry. The man was Strikeforce. The way Tito Ortiz was UFC for the longest time, Gilbert Melendez was Strikeforce.
Yeah, 100%. I have to agree with you. He bled Strikeforce, whatever color they were. Yeah, he totally was, man. I agree with you. I don't know why he wouldn't have been number 1.
I was dumbfounded.
Jacare in there. I'd have put.
I think they did have Jacare above him, which I still disagreed with.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put Dan Henderson in there, but he did some fun things while he was over there because he really wanted to leave the UFC. And
you know,
really
now that you say that, I remember. I think the top was
Cormier should be in there.
Daniel Cormier was number 1. Then it was Jacare, Gegard Mousasi, Dan Henderson. Okay. And I'm like, no. Okay, first of all, Jacare and Gegard Mousasi's most of their careers spent in Japan.
Yes.
I know they were champions of Strikeforce. Dan Henderson, he had like 3 fights, 4 fights in Strikeforce tops, from what I can remember. And one of them, he was dominated by Jake Shields. Daniel Cormier was there for a cup of coffee, in a sense, for a couple of fights, and then he won the Grand Prix. That's fine. That's fine if you want to rank him
really
high.
What a underdog victory that was, huh?
Yeah, well, he had to fight less fight. I mean, in the tournament, at least. He didn't have to fight through the tournament. He was a reserve. But, he won a reserve fight, but that doesn't count. It's not the same.
I'm looking at something here from Tapology. I'm just saying it's got number 1 as Melendez, number 2, Barnett, number Tapology. 3, Jacare, number 4, Cormier, number 5, Mousasi, number 6, Rafael Cavalcante, number 7, Rockhold, then Muhammad Lawal, then Josh Thompson, and Tyron Woodley. This I can kind of agree with where this one's at. The Tapology one I'm seeing right here.
Yeah, I wouldn't put Tyron Woodley in there, because the first time he took a jump up in competition in Strikeforce, he got his ass rocked and knocked out by Nate Marquardt. So
yeah.
But I mean, if you're talking about really fighters that went on to do things afterwards, sure, yeah. Absolutely, him and Cormier should be the top. But I'm talking about during Strikeforce.
King Mo wasn't a big Strikeforce guy. He's a Bellator guy. If you're going to put him to an organization, I'd put him to Bellator.
Well, I mean, he was the Strikeforce light heavyweight champion. He dominated Gegard Mousasi, so.
Yeah, but Gegard Mousasi is a true middleweight. He was overinflated. Anyway, so we're digressing like a son of a gun. But no, you're right. But at least this one on Tapology, I'm gonna agree with the top 5. Well, that's tough because Barnett. Are you really gonna put Barnett as? I'd put Barnett as like
a pride guy.
10 UFC guy or a pride guy before I would a Strikeforce guy. Jacare, DC, Mousasi is border, Cavalcante for sure Strikeforce, but
Yeah, well, I mean, bottom line is, though, if you don't have Gilbert Melendez as number 1, you're wrong. That was my point. I agree.
He was their poster boy. And you know what? As soon as Diaz got over there, he was a bit of a poster boy for him as well, and I don't see him on this list. And when Nick was over there, he was a big poster boy for the Strikeforce.
That's true. But, I mean, Melendez was there a lot longer. Same thing with Josh Thompson. Josh Thompson was a huge sell in San Jose. Huge sell.
Sure. Absolutely.
Josh Thompson, even not even a title fight, could sell out that arena. He was huge in San Jose.
I would go see Josh Thompson freaking fight today. I'd love to see him do some jiu-jitsu or something, man. He's a phenomenal athlete.
So, yeah, but, moving on, man. Yeah, like you said, we're digressing quite a bit here. UFC Fight Night on Friday, Ovince St. Preux versus Yushin Okami making his return to the UFC from the Pro Fighters League, formerly World Series of Fighting. His last fight was at 170 pounds, and he takes the fight on short notice at 205 pounds.
Yeah, we all know that he was way shrunken in, and he's not a 170-pound fighter at all. That was not the place for him.
But see, I thought he looked good against – I mean, he got out-wrestled by Fitch, but he didn't seem to have any problems making that weight. Well,
who doesn't get out-wrestled by Fitch? Yeah, but I think he – but that's part of the reason I think he got out-wrestled by Fitch, because he himself is a great wrestler. He's a good wrestler. And so to see him get out-wrestled – again, Fitch is probably one of the best to do it. But to him get completely outmatched by Fitch without – it almost seemed like he had no takedown defense. I thought he was too sucked. I think he's an 85er. That's where I think he belongs. Really, I think he's too small for 205, and he's too big for 70.
I think he was just trying to reinvent himself at 170.
But, yeah, a lot of guys do. They go down a weight class. Talk to Anthony Pettis. Talk to Gilbert Melendez. Talk to BJ Penn. I mean, we can go on and on and on about guys who maybe shouldn't have, went too late, went too early, whatever, like Pettis.
Well, what Okami shouldn't have done is he shouldn't have reached over St. Preux's neck, because
he got caught in that Von Preux choke.
Yeah, the St. Preux choke.
Jesus,
in my mind, yeah,
nice, man.
Ovince St. Preux, this third Von Preux choke, three of the five in the UFC history, is third in the UFC. That's ridiculous. This man, the way he is able to just latch it on is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's like he looks for it the entire time he's on the ground. Because he just, as soon as somebody makes a mistake and he sees it, he capitalizes immediately and just latches that choke on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, he was in half guard there. And I don't, Yushin didn't have that arm over the neck. And once he got it over the neck of St. Preux, it doesn't matter. That guy has got a squeeze. He has developed that choke. You know what? Last time we talked about OSP and his I'm going to call it the St. Preux choke. The last time we talked about him doing that, we're like, dude, white belt, let's get choked. White belt. You know what? I think he could fucking choke out a brown belt with that, dude. I'm not even joking. Like, you just don't realize that. He's got to have a squeeze like nobody's business, man.
Yeah. I
probably should know better.
I just, you know what not to do. Everybody knows what not to do, especially against St. Preux. To just keep doing it, though. It's ridiculous.
I take down my 3-year-old and we roll, and he knows to let go of the guillotine, you know?
Yeah, it's so crazy. It's nuts. And, yeah, Okami went out. He went out. He didn't even tap. He didn't, sleeping, bro. He tried to fight it, but he went out. That's a blood choke. That thing cut off all circulation.
If you look at it again, I've kind of got the post-fight highlights going through right now. They're showing my boy El Kakui choking motherfuckers out. But they just showed how he had it. And if you look at the basketballs that St. Preux calls his shoulders, and he gets that under your chin and just flexes it, dude, I don't care who you are. You can't force blood through there. You can't. The great choke, dude. Look, I understand why it's called the Von Preux choke. He was the first one to really do it. But St. Preux was the first one to perfect it. He's made it a viable weapon in top level MMA. It's a viable weapon now. I think other guys are going to pick up on it. I swear to God, other guys with tight squeezes, you get some of those guys that you remember Team Alpha Male, how they were the first guys to really get that arm in guillotine and really make the arm in really work.
It like a signature.
Yeah, I think we're going to start seeing somebody in some camp with some bright guy. I could see Alpha Male doing it. They're gonna turn that Von Preux choke, guys, with that strong squeeze and that hard elbow pressure. And again, the length, you know, I think that's part of it too, is that OSP is a long, tall guy, and he can leverage up on those toes. I think we're gonna start seeing that happen a little bit more, but I don't know.
Oh no, it's possible. It was great. Very impressive. I mean, sure, it came against a guy who was just fighting at 170, but the fact is, it's It's another Von Vuh choke. It's yeah, impressive.
But Okami should know better. I mean, he's the
everybody great should know grappler. Better, but he just keeps getting it. So
yeah, until somebody learns to just take that arm and put it above your head, put it above your own head, put it above your own head. Take your left arm and tap your right shoulder. Then you'll be okay.
Yeah, just don't reach for the damn guillotine when you're on your back. It's unless you got full guard, just don't even do it.
Yeah, half guard isn't going to do it unless you've got your hands grasped. If you've got your own hands grasped underneath and you're going for an arm in and half guard and you've got your outside leg up in high guard, then maybe play with it, dude. But don't do it like that, man. I'm just so disappointed in that fight, man. And you know the fight that really disappointed me, and it ruined my night.
Which fight is that? Who
stepped in for Gedalia, or who dosed her with some morphine because she didn't show up to fight tonight?
No.
Andrade is great.
Yeah, here's the problem. Klaje Gedalia. I learned that. That's how you pronounce it. Here's her problem. Technique wise, technically, she's the best fighter in the entire world. In the division. She just doesn't have the cardio to go along with it. And that's what really hurts her. And I'm not sure if it's weight cut, she cuts a good amount of weight to get to this weight class.
Or she just doesn't train. Than her tonight.
Well, Andrade should have never been fighting at 135 in the first place.
Well, she was, and she did, and she made
weight. I know. But she has better cardio. I just think Klaje just has cardio issues. And they reared its ugly head again tonight.
Because after the first round, Klaje has more cardio than a one round fight.
She did a lot of if you remember in the first round, she was piecing up Andrade on the feet, even busted her open above the eye. And then she got taken down and she tried to go for that guillotine and was squeezing and gassing her arms out, and then she was on the bottom, and then it was nothing but position control, which was gassing her out even more. And I'm not making excuses for her, she just has shit cardio, and that proves it. She needs to get her cardio back. Well, not back, she just needs to get it, period. Unfortunately, I just don't know if it's ever going to happen.
You know what I honestly think? I think she was looking past Andrade, and she's been training to fight a Muay Thai striker, and she was hoping that she could dance at distance, and Andrade was not having any of it and overpowered her, took her down, and beat the shit out of her.
Yeah, but I can't. I can't agree that she was like looking at her, not knowing that she wasn't going to come forward. That's all Andrade does. She had to have known, especially training at Greg Jackson's camp. She had to have known that she was just going to come forward. She just gassed. And yeah, Andrade beat the shit out of her.
She got the shit beat out of her, yeah, man. I don't want to say she gassed, dude, because that's not giving Andrade the just due, man. She beat the shit out of Gedalia. She beat the shit out of her. I gave rounds 2 and 3 10-8 to Gedalia. Round 2, Andrade. Round 1, Gedalia, close. I gave it to her. Rounds 2 and 8, 10-8, Andrade.
I gave 10-8 to round 3. 10-9 for round 2 in my mind. But either way, Andrade definitely took that fight. She definitely won that fight. So
and she, you know what? If she can get Jędrzejczyk down like that, lights out, dude. Like that. Dude, honestly,
unfortunately, Jędrzejczyk already outclassed the hell out of her. I don't think anybody beats her now at this point.
Well, I think Klaje,
if she gets cardio, yes. But Andrade just. Jędrzejczyk already proved how to beat her. You just stick and move on her the entire time. She did it for five rounds.
I think that Jędrzejczyk has better distance management. So I think that's why she beats her again, because I think Jędrzejczyk can stay far enough away, work the jab, you know, circle away, not just stay right behind her and not let her cut the cage off. I think footwork-wise, you're not going to get any better. Than Jędrzejczyk. And so that's how she beats her. I think she beats her with footwork and jab, as she did before. But I don't know, man. Andrade, I would not be surprised if she pissed hotter than TRT Vitor. It wouldn't surprise me, because that woman was a goddamn animal tonight.
Well, I mean, she is Brazilian, but then again, so is Klaje. But
no, According to Andrade, Claudia is no longer Brazilian.
Oh, just because she went to New Mexico and trained with Jackson. Come on.
Apparently, the Mexican supplements aren't as good as the Brazilian supplements.
Yeah. It was a great fight. It was a fun fight to watch. It was a fun fight. It was a great win for Andrade. Definitely puts her up in the rankings. Damn. I mean, if she wasn't coming off a loss, I'd say put Andrade up against Carolina Kubakovic next. But I think Kubakovic needs a KK. She needs a win first. She needs to get a victory going.
Yeah, don't do that to KK. She needs what do they call those? A tune up. She needs a tune up. KK needs a tune up.
I believe she does have a tune up coming up.
Who's she fighting?
On her next fight, if I remember correctly. I'm not exactly sure. But I could have sworn she has a fight booked, and it's a relatively easy fight, at least a newer fight. What's her name? I think Jody Escobar.
Okay, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, if I can remember correctly. I believe it's like Jody Escobar. She's a newcomer to the UFC, obviously. Definitely not ranked. I think they're trying to throw Kovacovic a bone here. So,
well, she needs a tune-up or two because she got beat pretty bad last time. By Claudia. Yeah, I was going to say Andrade, but by Gadea. So, yeah. Let's give it to her, man. She could use it. She's still young enough, man. Don't feed her to the wolves just yet. Let her build this machine. Just like Rose fighting Jacek. Don't do that to her. But the division is so thin.
I have zero interest in seeing that fight. Oh, my God.
Rose is going to get pieced up. Yeah, she's going to last all five rounds, and she's going to get pieced up. She's a brilliant fighter, a strong girl, great heart, great skill, great technique, but she can't handle, again, when it comes, the reason I love Yom Jacek so well, because it's one of my favorite things, is distance management, footwork, control, that jab of hers, that pop, 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 that 1, 2, 3, in and out,
distance management and footwork, you like that stuff? Really?
I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast before, that I'm a fan of that. And again, I'm a fan of great jiu-jitsu and passes and sweeps and all that, but just when it comes to stand-up, like guys that can throw in a phone booth, I love it. It's fun. It's great. But for me to see a guy who can work that jab and keep the distance and throw the combinations and get out and use angles and blend in the kicks with the punches on that distance match, someone who fights a little bit like TJ Dillashaw, perhaps. I don't know. I'm just going to throw that name out there. I kind of like that. And I think she's the female version of that, man. She uses a lot more strikes than she does kicks because she knows that she doesn't want to be on her back. But still, she has great distance management, great footwork, great angles. I'm a fanboy.
No, it's fine. No, I agree. I agree completely. I'm a fan as well. Moving on to another fight, though, of a guy that I was always a fan of. Unfortunately, it's time for him to retire.
Gogan Saki.
Yeah, right. Gomi. We'll talk about Saki. We could talk about Saki right now if you want.
We can talk about Gomi. We can get
the Fireball Kid, man. It's sad. It's over. Just please stop.
Yeah, I remember the Pride days. He was a beast.
Yeah, he just
first Pride lightweight champion ever. Unstoppable. Only Pride lightweight champion. Unstoppable, man. He was so fun to watch. But sometimes the sport outgrows you, you know.
Unfortunately, he got to the UFC way too late.
Yeah, well,
he held out on the contract. He just wanted to just make money, which is fine. Well, I get it.
He was making money hand over fist and Pride, rightfully so. But they were a business designed to be sold. They weren't a business designed to sustain, obviously. But Gomi, we love you, man. You're a hero in the sport. We're glad you fought in the UFC because you deserve a spot in the Hall of Fame. The MMA Hall of Fame, let alone the UFC Hall of Fame. So, Kim, great fight, dude. Way to go. Way to beat the brakes off a legend. And
yeah, and it's really sad about it, too, because Gomi's on he's got five straight losses in a row, and they're all by first-round finish. That's what's sad about it.
I think it was stop the touch early, to be honest with you. You and I kind of talked about that. I think that after Kim hit him and dropped him and he went down, not a single strike landed. Everything was blocked by the guard or by, an arm pushing it to the side. the argument is, okay, if you didn't stop it then, you would have stopped it in 15 seconds when he got, you know, Kim got
Yeah, it was on its way to being over, him, man. Right? It was over. It was done. Yeah.
You just don't do that to a legend, but you kind of do because the last four fights, he got stopped in the first round, and I don't want to see him drooling at 45 years old, you know?
And he was in tears when they were, I don't know if anybody else caught that. He was in tears. And everyone, I think he knows it's over, and I kind of was upset that they didn't. Well, and look at where he lost.
That's the same arena where he won the belt. That's the same arena where he built who the
fireball. And it should have been the arena he retired. The
fireball kid.
It should have been the arena he retired in. They should have given him the mic, and he should have retired.
Yeah, but he got knocked out. And you know the rule, man. How old is he?
He's 39 years old.
Oh yeah, dude, that's fucking old as shit.
Unless you're Randy Couture, you're not doing it. Sorry.
Yeah, but no offense to Randy Couture, dude, but I think he was in the pre-USADA era. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Come on, Couture, he was the natural.
The natural was natural. No, look.
Natural's totally natural.
Look, I don't know, and I really don't fucking care because it's different era, different time. But, yeah, he is probably the greatest of all time. I don't know. We could talk about this, just the reverence for the old and the love and the passion for the guys that did it before it was a sport, when it was really just a fight. You know what I mean?
No, I get it. So let's talk about a man who came from a long-standing sport, Gohan Saki, making a successful UFC debut, 0-1 record in MMA. But a very, very, very decorated career in kickboxing. First round KO. What do you think about the stoppage?
I thought it was good. The reason I think it was good was because Da Silva was taking a wicked beating on his feet before it got to this point. Before Gohan Saki hit him with that wicked left hook. He was almost, you know, out on his feet. If it was a kickboxing fight or a boxing fight up against the ropes, I think it would have been stopped a touch earlier. So when Da Silva got rocked and went down to his back and seemed stiff, I mean, you know, he had his head forward because he didn't want to snap back against the canvas and all that. I think it was a proper stoppage. I don't think Saki had anything left in him to get on top of him and pound him, so thank God it stopped. But I agree with the stoppage. I agree with the stoppage because of the damage previous.
Yeah, that's what I thought was funny about it, because I was thinking in my head, like, if he doesn't finish Da Silva this round, like right now, he's going to lose in the second round. Da Silva's going to finish him. And they start swinging because Da Silva was coming up on him. He was coming out. He was, like, coming up in that fight towards the end. He was lighting him up, knees, elbows, everything.
Yeah, and Da Silva's used to a 5-round fight. Saki's used to a 3-round fight, man. And so, again, we talked about it a couple weeks ago. We can talk about the fight that we shall not name, the Harry Potter fucking fight.
Yeah.
It's a sprint. And you can see Gohan Saki was sprinting for the first 3 minutes, and right about the 315, 320 mark, he had nothing left. Da Silva knew that and started to pour it on him, and he got a little bit cocky and left his hands down because he did get pieced up a touch before then, and he got dropped, man. He got dropped by a wicked Saki, and Saki admitted at the end in his post-fight interview, got to work on my cardio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I honestly believe that a trip to the middleweight division would probably be best for him. He's very undersized for the light heavyweight division.
You're right, but again, he comes from that kickboxing/boxing background.
I know, but it's
cutting
that
kind of weight.
He's got to learn because it's going to be hard when he's going to, if he wants to try to get against those top guys in the light heavyweight division. You think St. Cruz just going to stand with him? No. St. Cruz is going to put his ass on his back.
You're asking this gentleman to give up the sugars and sweets? Look at that face. That's a man who enjoys himself a chocolate bar.
If he wants to be successful and he wants to try to win a title in MMA, yeah, you got to do it. Sorry, man. Much respect. Kickboxing, brother. You got to do something. And fighting undersized in 2017, unless your name is Frankie Edgar, and last I checked, it's not, you're not winning a title.
No, his name's Gohan Saki. I think I said that right.
No, you said that right.
But he's 33, man. Can he get there at the middleweight?
At middleweight, yes, he can. He can learn to weight cut. You can learn to weight cut. Unfortunately, he won't learn to stop people like DC's takedowns. But I did like what DC said in the pre-fight show. He said, what are you talking about? I'm going to be retired by the time this guy works to a title fight.
He's right.
So, yeah, he's totally right. I love it.
Because he's 1-1 in MMA, and okay, he had a great showing against Da Silva. So let's talk about who do you put him against next? Who? Latifi? Okay. Put him against a real wrestler like Latifi.
Latifi would put him on his back so quick. I'm sorry. At this
point.
Oh my god. No, if they want Saki to be a star, if they want to try to make money off the man, especially with these international fights, you give him favorable matchups like they did tonight. Favorable.
Latifi never becomes a championship contender. Because you gotta beat a Latifi if you want to friggin' run at the belt.
Well, you can do that later, but you don't do that in your second UFC fight.
Then who do you got?
I mean, look what they just did to Tyson Pedro. They threw him in against Latifi way too early. Just wasn't ready for it. So, but the difference is Saki is a star. Saki can make money, especially overseas in Japan.
Okay, but how many times a year do they fight in Japan? Once.
Doesn't matter. They can do it more than once. Saki's a star. They can make money. They can use them. I'm just saying, man. They can also get viewerships and ratings from Japan because of Saki. More people would watch over there because he's a legend in kickboxing.
He's a legend, absolutely.
You got to use kickboxing. That star power, so you don't just immediately throw him in there. We were talking about Conor earlier. What type of fighter did they avoid for Conor for the longest time because they didn't want to ruin his star power? Wrestlers. The only time they gave him a wrestler was when it was a wrestler coming on 13 days' notice. That's the only time. They protect... Yeah, it was smart. Okay. It built
him
up.
Give him a Steve Bossy?
Yeah. Okay. Steve Bossy
Cannoneer,
has a fight.
Maybe?
I think Bossy has a fight coming up next, but the winner of Bossy and whoever he's fighting, I forgot who he's fighting off the top of my head. But, yeah. I'm okay with that. Bossy would throw down. That'd be a great fight.
Misha Cirkunov, maybe? Okay, we're talking some guys.
No, Misha Cirkunov would absolutely demolish him on the ground.
Well, is Misha going to take him down? Misha likes to stand and trade.
No, Misha's a ground guy. He just got caught by Ozdemir. Nobody saw that coming.
All right. So we got Bosey, the winner of the Bosey fight. I don't know who he's fighting next either. I'm just trying to look at some guys and some names that I'm just trying to think for him. Okay.
Yeah, bring back a James Tahuna. Who cares? Bring him back. I don't know. He's probably retired. Tahuna. Yeah, he's probably retired. I don't care.
I hope he's retired.
Give him a Sean O'Connell. I think Sean O'Connell's still in the UFC. I'm not sure off the top of my head.
Give him a CB Dalloway. No offense to Dalloway, but his takedown
Dalloway would take him down immediately.
Ed Herman, maybe?
Yeah, you give him... No, Ed Herman's still got jiu-jitsu and he's got wrestling to be able to take him down. Hold on, everybody else does. Tom Lawler's
going to take him down. Give him Manoah. Manoah will still take him down.
That's too high, man. I think Manoah's got the reach advantage on him. I mean, you've got to give him. I like the Sean O'Connell. I like the Steve Bossy. Brian Stann comes out of retirement. Yeah, it's not happening, but still. At this point in his career, you avoid giving him people like Misha Cirkunov, Jared Cannonier, fighters that have a good ground game and a good takedown game. Will they take down Saki? Give him Volante. That's going to be a slugfest.
Because Beyonce's got decent boxing, but he's got great takedown, so he's going to make the attempt to take you down. But he doesn't have, you know what I mean? I think that's a good fight because that's going to test him a little bit. Because his takedown is good tonight.
Volante will stand up with him and throw down. Yeah, give him that. It's just like the Steve Bossy fight. Give him that. That's fine.
Isn't even going to attempt the takedown. I like the fact that Beyonce will attempt the takedown. He's got good wrestling. So Beyonce will stand and box, and he'll get in tight with you, and he'll go for a body lock, and he'll go for some takedowns. Because honest to God, I thought Saki's takedown defense tonight looked really good. I thought it looked good.
It was against
Silva. Went for a couple takedowns. So. He had the overhook. He just like Cormier was saying in the pre-fight, he worked that outside underhook, and he got it. And he had great takedown defense tonight. The couple two attempts that were shot at him.
Here you go. Gohan Saki versus Khalil Roundtree. Bam. There you go. Fight. Thing's over.
Roundtree's going to take him down in 10 seconds and pound
him. No, Roundtree doesn't have a ground game. He doesn't want to take anybody down. He's a striker. And it's perfect. It'll be fireworks.
All right. Did you hear that? You got that one in the books there, Sean Selby. Make it happen. MMA to the Max doing your job once again.
Yeah, because... Yeah, because because I got the balls to do things that people don't do. And you know who doesn't have balls anymore?
Teruto
Ishihara.
Oh, okay.
Jesus. Rolando D. Oh, my. Three times. God. Jesus.
Dude, that third one, I'm holding my own right now, dude. That was so bad. It was straight shin to cup. That was so
nasty.
And they banned the Muay Thai steel cup.
Yeah, and the fact that he also looked at the ref and said, was like, and actually asked, told the ref, that was only the first time. No, fucker, yeah. It was the third time.
It was the first time you kicked him in the dick. The other two were knees. The hell is wrong with you?
And I'm sorry. I got his first time a warning, second time a point, third time, three strikes, you're out. That should have been a DQ. That's the way I would put it. That's what I would put in the rules.
Yeah, well, at least
because next time you won't. Yeah, at least I was worried for a minute because he was taking a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, that fight was what it was. It was a good fight. I thought Ishihara should have won it, as he did. Manny Pacquiao lost, even though he had some great kicks, which surprised me. Oh, wait, that's not Pacquiao. Never mind, that's Dahi.
That is a
bloated... Dude, does he not look like Pacquiao's long-lost freaking half-brother?
Yeah, kind Holy of bloated crap. Bloated Pacquiao, yeah. You know what the sad thing about it is if he didn't kick him in the nuts the third time and get that point deducted, he would have walked away with a majority draw.
Yeah, I know.
He cost himself a majority draw. Like, he was the reason he lost the fight. That's the sad part.
I have no idea where he was trying to kick with that kick other than his dick. It wasn't like he was turning his hip over for an inside leg kick. He went like straight to the dick. That was like a street yard fucking dick kick. You know what I mean? Straight up, pow, right in the ballsack.
Yeah. Oh, man, that was loud. It hurt. It hurt me watching. I just, a good low blow like that, a good low shot like that, where you can just hear the it's not really a smack, it's a thud. That's just really what gets me going. Oh, God.
It was shin to cup, man. It's awful.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Opening the card, though, is
Formiga.
Juicy of Formiga's choking out Uke Sasaki in the first round. Very entertaining fight for at least the 4.5 minutes that it lasted.
Do you agree with Formiga's call out? You think he gets a title shot again?
I mean, he did mention, well, he hasn't had a title shot yet. His thing is
sorry, and again, it's the wrong word, but yeah.
Everybody that beats him gets a title shot afterwards, and it's been like that for the most part. He's just looking for his own. After Mighty Mouse disposes of Ray Borg, whoever
Mighty Mouse is going to 35.
Yeah, I mean, you can either put Formiga against a Sergio Pettis. I think again. I don't. No, they have not fought yet. You can either put him against Sergio Pettis, or you can put him against Henry Cejudo again, which Cejudo beat him by a split decision. So,
yeah, close. And I agree with that decision. I agreed
with it as well. But
yeah, Formiga lost that fight.
Yeah, it was close.
So that's all. So that settles it since we agreed.
Yeah,
but So yeah, so far his losses have been to Dodson, Benavidez, Cejudo, and Borg.
All top five flyweights, all of them. So, I mean, he's one of the best in the world. He's one of the best flyweights in the world. He was the best flyweight in the world until losing the Tachi Palace Fights flyweight championship to Ian McCall, who
yes.
also was one of the best flyweights in the world.
Man, injury and stuff, dude. I wish that guy was still alive.
His career's done. He's done.
I know. I believe he said he retired, not just because of whatever brain injuries he suffered, but his fucking hand. He can't open a jar of pickles without breaking his hand anymore. And I loved watching that guy fight. But again, that's what we talked about before, man. The amount of money these guys get just doesn't justify it. Because what is Ian McCall going to do? Open up a gym where it's viable for the next 10 to 15 years unless he gets like a real fight team behind him in his gym? What does that do?
McCall doesn't have anything to worry about, man.
I hope not, dude. He's a good guy. I know he's got to take care of his daughter and all those things.
I know he's
dude.
Got his own podcast, too, so I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And unlike us, I'm pretty sure he has some sponsors paying him some money for it, so.
Well, I hope so. I could on it at least because I know he's friends with Mr. Rogan, but yeah.
I don't hope so that much, man. I want some of that sponsorship money. Why don't you guys send it our way?
Well, once you and I stop being fat, lazy fucks, and maybe on it, we're like, hey, those are athletic gentlemen. They're talking about MMA.
Yeah, we need to branch out here. We need to work on a marketing.
Yeah, we need to work on a marketing. Four listeners, it's a pleasure talking to you again.
Yeah, I'm so glad all four of you listen every week. That's pretty awesome.
Sorry about last week. So we're making up to you this week because I'm extra enthusiastic.
Last week's gonna drop it to 3. So,
damn it, not again. Yeah, he's beaten guys like Jorgensen. He's beat Wilson Hayes. He's beat Dustin Ortiz. Well, who hasn't beaten Scott Jorgensen? That's a very good question.
Even his own skin has beaten Scott Jorgensen.
That's fucked up, dude. That guy has a thing.
Yeah, I know. But Lego. I don't care. I can make a joke.
No, it's good because he's lost to. Everybody? He lost to Manville the Anvil.
Yeah. Alejandro Perez, Wilson Hayes, Zach McCoskey. Well,
a lot of people lose to Wilson Hayes. Eddie Wineland. Well, of course, he lost to Henan Barao. What was he doing fighting at 135? I guess over 425.
Well, he was at 135, and then he tried to drop to 125 and had no success whatsoever.
Dominic Cruz.
Yeah, he lost to Cruz twice, I believe, didn't he?
Yeah, WEC, I think. Yeah.
Or maybe it was once. I don't remember. I think it was once. If why you're are we not talking about Scott Jorgensen so much, man?
I don't know, dude. We get on these tangents.
I liked Scott Jorgensen. Never. He was a cool guy. He was a good fighter for a while, but he fell off.
Formiga versus Pettis. All right, we've made that matchup. Now we're on to what happens to Nakamura versus Marino. Marino forgot to fight, and he got his ass kicked by Nakamura, who I think is also Pacquiao's second cousin once removed.
I like Keita Nakamura, man. That guy's great.
He's a great fighter. Yeah, he looks great. Phenomenal tonight. He beat Marino's ass.
I'm glad he got his other shot in the UFC. So
yeah, he beat Marino's ass, dude. And hats off, man. Good job.
It was a good fight. It was a close fight. Went to split decision.
I got my ass kicked in our league tonight, and I tried to take some risks and didn't pay off.
Siri Kondo defeated Shan Mizhan. I think I got that right. By split decision as well. I didn't think it should have been a split. I thought Kondo clearly had it at least 2-1. Shinzo Anzai defeats Luke Jomo. Very disappointed that fight. I had Jomo winning, picked at least, but no, he definitely lost that fight, I thought. Daiichi Abai, I think is how you pronounce it. I don't remember off the top of my head. Sorry. Defeated Hungu Lim after 13 months off. Abe might be right. Making his UFC debut at 5-0. He's now 6-0. Great fight. Every fight on this card is really good. Even all the fights, honestly. Not a single fight was boring in my mind. So that's why when everybody's talking about...
It was a good card. Yeah.
Oh, you know, everybody sees the card like, who? Oh, nobody cares about this fight. Yeah, well, you know what? The ones that you don't care about, that people talk about, are the best ones. And we said that on this show many times, numerous times. These are always the best fights.
Well, that's how it is when we're talking about, like, these fighters and like, who's that guy? I never heard of him. What's that guy? Just watch these cards. And you'll learn to find out who they are. I know Robert and I are going to watch some RFAs and some legacy fights and some, you know, King of the Cage out here locally in Southern California. We're going to know who some of these guys are more than most. But if you just watch these UFC fight night fights, you're going to learn who a lot of these guys are. And you're going to see them. Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember when he did this. And you're going to find guys showing up and becoming, you know, names, you know, just like Alan Jobin tonight. A lot of people may not have known who he was, but look what the hell he did behind the desk tonight. Phenomenal job by Jobin.
Yeah,
he
was
a really, really good job.
I enjoyed him.
And the funny thing is especially Bisping has always got to alpha male everybody, and Jobin was like, "No, I'm not having it. I'm here for a reason, asshole. I'm going to say some things too."
Jobin was very impressive. Better behind the desk than he is as a fighter. Sorry, like Jobin, but the man has no head movement. Maybe he might want to move away from fighting and go on beyond the desk completely and stick with modeling.
And he's always got a job modeling.
Yeah, he's always got that job. Him and Elias Theodoru.
Yeah, that man is pretty, and that aggravates me. He's pretty.
He's got that
prettier
hair.
Than me.
It's the hair.
He not only is he prettier than me, but he can beat the living shit out of me. That's not fair. That's not fair, Joe Ban.
Well, that's
you can't probably, have it all.
That could also be about 75% of the world too. So
prettier than me, but I can beat up at least 33% of the world because half of the world is
if
women.
We're counting,
so, I mean,
if we're counting kids.
Yeah, kids and women. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
right.
There's a lot of women I can beat up, and there's a lot of women that can beat me up, and there's most kids I can beat up. So that's what I'm saying. I could beat up 33% of the world.
That's still more than I can say.
And I'm saying, like, at least I'm like at least a 5 on a good day. So, you know, half the world better looking than me. So I'm not doing so bad. But we kind of touched base on this card, last week's card. Tomorrow night. Riverside Joe's boy, Lorenz Larkin, is fighting tomorrow night against Paul Simtek. Punch it after the bell and the fight's over. Fuck you in the mouth daily.
Still holding on to that, huh?
Not, you know, and I'm not a Koscheck fan. Never liked Josh Koscheck. Never. Not in tough. Never have I liked him. He's just not the kind of personality that I jive with. I thought he tried to cheap shot him, you know, over... Herb Dean, I think, was the ref at the time, tried to throw punches at the end of the fight because he got ground and pounded and he got out wrestled by Koscheck. I just thought he was a poor sport, and he has shown to be a poor sport ever since. Fucking Rory McDonald beat the fucking brakes off of him, and he wanted to complain, well, why didn't he want to stand in and trade with me? Well, because he's got a 99.9% chance of beating your ass on the ground, and he's got a 75% chance of beating your ass on the feet. So he takes you down, asshole. Learn some takedown defense, you know? I just have no love for that guy, dude. Fuck Simtek. But I have a very little bit of – it's not a very strong opinion. I have a mild opinion on Paul Daly. What about you? How do you feel about tomorrow night's fights? That's just one of the fights I'm looking forward to tomorrow night.
Yeah, I think Larkin versus Daly is going to be very entertaining. Very, very entertaining striking match. I'm not exactly sure who I would pick in this fight because I do think Lorenz Larkin possesses elite striking, but so does Paul Daly. I'm really looking forward to the main event of Benson Henderson and Patricky Fieri. That's going to be fireworks in my mind. I don't know if Henderson still has it, so I'm not sure if he's going to pull off the victory because Patricky does have power.
The first fight was a bit of a letdown. Patricky ended up hurting his knee in it, and Benson.
Well,
was
that was
afraid
that wasn't Patricky
to
actually.
Punch.
That was his little brother Patricio.
Oh, you're right. That was Patricio. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Featherweight.
You're right. But that's no fair. They're both pit bull.
Yeah, they're both really good.
They're both
Aaron Pico.
Fighters.
I'm excited to see him fight again.
Yeah, featherweight, right?
At featherweight, yeah, which is what he should have been. This is a more favorable matchup for him to win. Adam Piccolotti. I think that's how you remember. I can't remember Piccolotti. I'm excited to see him fight. He's 9-0. He's a beast. I like watching that guy fight. Bellator's always been good on their prospects. Always good on finding the prospects. So it's going to be a good
Coker,
card.
The best
I won't be watching it.
Bellator made.
I won't be watching it till Sunday afternoon when I get home from work. But I'll definitely be watching it. So. I'm gonna try to
don't worry.
I'll spoil it
all for you.
I bet.
Send you text messages all night, so you'll know what's going on.
I bet. Yeah, don't do that. I got important
you know
business.
I'm going to. I'm not really a nice person.
I'm gonna block your fucking phone number.
Riverside Joe blocked.
Yeah. All right, Joe. We got social media. Let's get ready to get out of here. We both got some big stuff to do tomorrow.
Yeah, we've got. Your little daughter's birthday party tomorrow to go to.
That's right.
You know, house chores and whatnot. For the first weekend, I don't have a crew working out there at my different projects on a Saturday, so I don't have to worry about answering the phone and dealing with all that nonsense, so that's helpful for me. But that's just a side note. I digress. It allows me to drink more on a Friday night than normal.
There you go.
My social media, you can get a hold of me at JoeHud45 on Twitter, as well as MMA to the Max Joe on Instagram. Again, I'm working on my social media game. A gentleman of my advanced years of 37 years old didn't grow up Twittering and Instagramming and Facebook and whatnot. So I'm learning. So if you want to actually stay up to date with all this fun stuff, Robert, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, you could always find me at my own personal Twitter account of it's at It's Rock Robster. Find me on Instagram at MMA to the Max Rob. Going back to Twitter, though, if you want to follow the show, you can always find that at MMA. On Twitter at MMA to the Max Show. Follow everything you can there. Go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/MMA to the Max podcast to follow everything we talk about there. We always get everybody's opinions on the fights coming up, as well as post all of our new episodes. If you don't want to follow us there, which really sucks if you don't, go visit us at w2mnet.com. That is our parent site for the show. All of our shows are up there, as well as plenty of other content having to deal with wrestling, football, music, movies, all forms of entertainment and sports, even soccer. Yeah, right. Who cares?
You mean football, not American football. Football. You saying?
Yeah, right. As always, we will try to respond to any messages or comments you post on our page. If you want to come on and just tell me how much you hate the Kansas City Chiefs, I know how many Raider fans are out there. Go ahead and do
so. I'm not
a
Raiders fan. I just hate the Chiefs because you like them. So.
Yeah, that's fine. I get that a lot, actually, from a lot of people. But, yeah, find us next week. There's no fight next week. We're going to discuss the Bellator.
Before we punch out, I just want to make note that the UFC listens to MMA to the Max. I'm scrolling through the interwebs here, and right now, on this day in UFC history, they note Demetrius Johnson became the first and only flyweight champion in the UFC, right? Didn't we talk about that's how they're supposed to be marketing him as the first and only, the one and only? So
they should,
UFC,
but they
you're
don't.
Welcome. If you want some more marketing advice, again, get a hold of me, JoeHud45 at JoeHud45 on Twitter, or MMA to the Max Joe. Okay, I can give you some more advice. The first couple times you're going to be free, but I'm going to start charging you guys pretty soon here. Rockhold, you're on notice as well. Okay, I'm done.
On that note, I guess that's as good as any to cut this off, go to bed.
All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. As always, I'm your host, Robert Taylor, with my co-host.
I am Riverside Joe.
We'll see you next week. Take care.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.